My name is Egan Bodker. I live in Salem, Oregon. All of my ancestors came from Scandinavia. Father and his wife and my mother's parents all came from Scandinavia, all from Denmark. I qualify that by saying that my father's mother originally came from the Faroe Islands. Although I don't remember her, I remember her mother, or my great-grandmother, my Ullamore, to some extent. Well, all I can recall of her is that I seem to recall seeing her standing on her porch in a house in Junction City. I know that she came over about 1913 or 14, because she was an elderly lady then, probably in her 60s, early 60s, someplace, and I imagine wanted to come and see two of her daughters that she hadn't seen for years. And she lived until she was 19, until 1939. She must have been in her 90s before she died. She was one of the leaders of sort of an incipient nationalist independence movement in the Faroe Islands in the late 1800s. Where I guess the interest that I have in the Faroe Islands and Faroese politics comes from, maybe not acquaintance with her, but a curiosity about her. My father's father came from someplace in Jutland. I think the place was Holstenstation. He came to avoid service in the German army, which that part of Denmark was at that time within Germany as a result of the Dano-Prussian War of 1864. As I believe he was at that time probably a soldier in the German army and went AWOL or deserted and came to this country either with his brother, or his brother came shortly before or after. Settled first, as I recall, in Chicago, and somehow from Chicago ended up in Junction City, Oregon. He and his brother were, well, I guess I can't really recall what they were in Chicago from the stories I've heard, but they met two sisters while they were living in Chicago, and each married one of the sisters, and then as a group of four, I imagine, came out to Junction City. Somehow they'd heard about A.C. Nielsen buying land in Junction City, and the land was available for settlement. My mother's parents came from Denmark. My mother's father came from a place in Jutland also, and her mother, I am guessing, came from Copenhagen, but it's strictly a guess. They came and somehow ended up in Tyler, Minnesota. When my mother was six, maybe, or maybe before that, they moved from there to Partridge, or what became Asco, Minnesota. And my mother grew up there, and I can remember visiting there as a small child. And I can remember going back in more recent years. Asco is still what it was, what I recall it being 30 or 35 years ago, a small town. Now it's off the main highway, but it didn't grow even while it was on the main highway. I still have cousins who live there. I don't know whether my grandparents knew anybody in the United States before they came. I would imagine that they had letters from friends or seen letters from friends and relatives before they came. Whether or not they spoke English, I don't really know. My guess is from their backgrounds that they must not have spoken in English or not very much English, being farmers or peasants in the old country. However, my father's mother must have known English because she was a stewapia or a house girl for somebody in Scotland,
prior to coming to the United States. So she obviously knew enough English to survive and be useful to other people, I assume also herself. I remember several years ago we discovered an old Scottish cookbook, or I guess rediscovered that cookbook, that my grandmother had brought from Scotland when she came, probably in the early 1900s, or really must have been the late 1800s, since my father was born in 1904. I imagine that they came over in the 1890s. I don't recall if they, or how they learned English or any problems they faced in speaking English. I recall stories of problems my father faced in speaking English, that as a child of immigrants and living in a Danish community where it wasn't strictly Danish, that there were lots of non-Danes around, or at least some non-Danes, that he spoke Danish in home, at the home, and when he went to school the first day, he spoke no English, and a couple of his older cousins teased him and evidently told him to ask some things in English, which nice boys didn't ask, and the teacher got rather upset. I don't recall exactly what it was now, it just comes to mind at this point in time. I remember his stories of growing up in Junction City when he tells that he would cross the street to avoid having to meet his parents downtown because they would address him in Danish. And he would rather speak English and be one of the group. There were probably other difficulties in terms of learning English. I haven't heard of them or haven't thought about asking how they learned English. My ancestors really, or my grandparents, didn't tell me of the experience they had on the trip over on the to the United States. I guess I was too young to be interested or care about it. And they passed away. My father's mother died when I was, well, I would guess 1 or 2 years old. My great-grandmother died when I was 4 or 5. My father's father died when I was 8 or 9. My father's mother died when I was, I would guess, 9 or 10. And her father died when I was 15, but he lived in Minnesota, so I didn't get to talk much with him anyway.
What did you call your grandparents?
I called my mother's father was always Bestefar, and I can remember trying to explain this to other children, that was Bestefar, and being rather confused and embarrassed that I didn't have a grandfather. I had a Bestefar, and grandfather came out rather strange sounding to me. My father's father was always Farfar, and I never thought of him as grandfather. And even today, grandfather, grandmother, are kind of strange sounding terms. They even sound strange when my children use them. When they talk about my parents, it's Bestefar and Bestemor, but when they explain who the relatives are, talk about them to their friends, it's my grandfather or my grandmother, and I can see them enunciating very clearly so that they get all of the syllables right and pronounce it correctly, where Bestemor and Bestefar come out much more easily. But I didn't carry this over into aunts or uncles, and being tanta or uncle, it was just Bestefar, Farfar. And my grandmothers died, I guess, before I learned to talk of them as Bestemor, Farmor, Mormor. Although my father's brother's wife was always Muster, and he was always Farbro, and this carried on, this began long before I knew what Muster or Farbro were, and I could never think of them as aunt or uncle or great aunt or great uncle or this type of thing. I still, I guess, don't really associate the terms Muster or Farbro with anything except two individuals that I referred to in these terms. My father's folks ended up here in Junction City probably around the turn of the century and settled down by the Willamette River and somehow moved from there a couple of miles closer to town and onto one place and then moved a mile farther north, and that's the place where I recall visiting my far-far. Don't know the history of the move or why they went from one place to another. They were farmers, and I guess had a pretty good-sized farm from that. My mother's parents, I don't know how they started. My bestefar was a store owner and finally became a banker. And I'm not quite sure how he got from the store to the banker. And the Depression ended the banking, and he became an insurance man or a real estate man. I'm not quite sure which. I'm not sure what their first experiences were in the United States. I don't really have any ideas what they did beyond my father's side, go to Chicago and end up in Junction City, and my mother's side ended up in Tyler somehow, and then from there to Asco, Minnesota. Except on my mother's side, there was a fellow that I recall meeting once in New York City, near when I was in back east at college. He was just Uncle John, and his daughter was Gertrude. Gertrude had visited my mother when they were both young children, and she came from New York and visited my mother in Asco. And when I met Uncle John, he lived in the second or third floor of an apartment in New York City, someplace around Columbia University, and he was really interested that I'd come to visit him. And Gertrude, his daughter, who was living with him and taking care of him, and he just wanted to know whether they had hamburgers out in the West, and he thought everything was Indians. And I'm sure he was putting me on, but my dad tells the stories that he'd done the same lines to him 25 years before when he'd visited him. And there was also an Uncle Neil who lived in Chicago, who I visited once, who was some sort of bigwig in, I guess, the steel business or building steel furnaces or something like this. And he eventually ended up going to Sweden on business trips. And that's all I really can remember about him. We ate Scandinavian food, and we lived what I thought was quite a Scandinavian life in my home. We talked about leivepastei, and when I found out that liver paste was that, it went back to being leivepastei. And when I found out that, I can't remember the German word. It's the German for leivepastei, anyway. Yeah, Braunschweiger was the same thing. I still go back to leivepastei, and we made it occasionally at home, and we make it in my home now, partly because it's fun, mainly because it tastes better. We celebrated a Danish Christmas. I could never understand the other kids who had Christmas on Christmas morning. I know it said that in the books, but Christmas came on Christmas Eve.
Would you further tell us about your Christmas celebration starting when you started
here? As a small child, I don't ever remember doing much with preparations. I was more interested in the actual results of Christmas Eve. Although the preparations did begin with Christmas cookies, and that began 2 weeks or 10 days before Christmas, when everybody got serious, meaning my mother, especially my father, and finally me, I guess, in terms of making Christmas cookies with the Kleiner and the Spritz to some extent, although not too much now. And I'm trying to think of another name. The ones that get the Kringler. And, those are the ones, the Kleiner and the Kringler stick in my mind most of all. And we prepared that, buying the presents, wrapping them. The tree was set up, but there was no big secret of setting up the tree. We all participated in that, and decorating the tree. And my father had some old decorations that had come from his family, one with a strange picture of whatever the Danish equivalent of Santa Claus was, and four little sort of furry and gilded pipe cleaner type things around the edge that it would hang on, and we put that on. It was a strange type of thing, and we didn't have a set of Danish flags. I was always impressed with my aunt, who had the Danish flags that could go around the tree. And it was always a big dinner, Christmas Eve, where the whole family got together, really sort of a primitive as it may be, a very extended family of aunts and uncles and cousins, and we all got together, and we, after dinner, would dance around the tree, and sing Christmas carols, and sing New Havayul again. I'm sure it was only once or twice, but maybe at my request it ended up being 15 or 20 times, because I still remember singing New Havayul again, and not knowing what it meant. Didn't make any difference what it meant. It was just fun to sing. And, in translation, it's not very interesting.
What were some of the foods you ate?
Oh, stuffed turkey, primarily, and turkey stuffing, and mashed potatoes and gravy. And, I can't really recall all of the foods. It was followed always by rum pudding, I think, or that may be something more recently that I've been able to con my mother into repairing. There was always riz alaman. Riz alaman, is that right, what I want to say? Anyway, the rice porridge with the almond stuck in it, and it was always a rush to see who was going to get the almond. And I don't recall that I ever got it, but I assume I did. And if I didn't, the rice was good enough.
If you didn't get it, I mean if you got it,
a small present of some kind or other. It might be a toy car, it might be a bar or a package of bubble bath, or it might be a funny poster. I don't really recall. These are examples that I can remember from the last 5 or 10 years rather than what happened when I was a child with that. I just remember the good taste of the rice and the spices that went with it and the milk that went on it. And we had a lot of Danish sayings. When it was time to eat, it was always "Værsgo," and nobody ever said "Come to the table." Nobody ever said "It's time to eat now." It was always "Værsgo," and I can remember doing this occasionally when company was around, and even non-Danish speaking people seemed to understand, you know, that "Værsgo" means it's time to come and eat, and we use it at home. Works fine. Wasn't much in the way of Danish songs in my home because I'm not very musical, and my mother never beat me into being musical. The poems that were Danish probably came from listening to my father recite an occasional poem, but usually that came out from, well, I remember this, although it doesn't probably tie into the Scandinavian bit, that he, while shaving or something, when I came down, get washed up in the morning, he might be in the bathroom shaving, and seeing me disgruntled and bewildered early in the morning, like most people are when they get up in the morning, would start reciting Gunga Din or some French poetry or Shakespeare that he recalled from his days in high school in Junction City, where the teacher managed to take these children and really instill a love of poetry into them. In his case, it lasted for years and years. There was were always lots of Danish books around. I can remember as a child, several times as a child, anywhere from 8 to 15 or 20 years of age, going through Joe Knutson's Introduction to the Danish Language. And I'm sure I never made it past page 10, but I had those first 10 pages several times on my own initiative. And I also got a book one year, must have been a young child, Svanabogen. And I remember having that read to me. And all I can really recall at this point are the dog and the cat, one named Trofast and the other Snavy. And then I think in there is the poem of the three sisters and three princesses and the three princes. Sip, sip, sipper nip, sip, sipper nip, sip, serum, sip. And I can't remember the names of the princes, but they go basically along the same tongue-twisting line. And in our house today, in my family, I think Scandinavian customs are just as strong as they were where I grew up, in my parents' home. Still fares go when it's time to eat, and a nice lunch on Saturday, or when guests are over for a fancy meal, it's a nice glass of beer, and a little glass of schnapps to go with it, and maybe a glass of wine, but the beer and the schnapps are a significant part, and sort of been built into the Saturday lunch for the family, where we can all sit down and relax together, and talk about all the neat things we should have been doing all week long and didn't get done. We still make Leopostei. I can remember also trying to make Rulapus. My wife is Danish of sorts. And her Danish comes out of her father's side, who immigrated from New Zealand, and his father, or his grandfather, came from Denmark, but immigrated to New Zealand instead of the United States. Shortly after we were married, we decided we'd make some rulapus, and it turned out beautiful. It was really fine. And a year later, we decided we'd do it again. Only that time, it turned very hot. And in putting it out to soak or in the brine, the change in the temperature affected what sort of chemical thing is supposed to take place. In the process of boiling it, it began to smell bad. The longer we boiled it, the worse it smelled. Take several hours to boil, as I recall, and it really stunk the whole apartment. And it smelled like blue cheese. And got all done and aired out the apartment and cut off a little piece, and damned if it didn't taste like blue cheese. And I decided I didn't want to eat meat that tasted like blue cheese, but the couple that lived next to us in graduate school housing had just come back from Denmark and were living as frugally as possible, and he decided that if it tasted like blue cheese, it must be as good as blue cheese. So he took the 3 or 4 pounds of it, and they enjoyed it tremendously. And, they didn't die, so it couldn't have been too bad. My wife's name is Diana Bodker, or Diana Wright, originally, and her heritage is mixed, mongrelized, however you want to refer to it. At least she's not a pure Scandinavian, but like a lot of the Scandinavians today, sort of an adopted one, becoming more Danishized. We have 2 children, daughter Ingrid, who's 15, and a son Kai, who's 12. And I guess those names sort of indicate my Scandinavian orientation, or my pro-Scandinavian attitudes, plus a desire to maintain it. We have visited Scandinavia. I went there first in 1956 as a student, and was at Asko High School. Spent the winter there as a member of the Scandinavian Seminar. And from there, traveled around Europe. Then in 1970, desire to leave Grandview College, where I'd been teaching for 5 years, and return to the West Coast. We decided the easiest way to do that was to go to Europe first and then come to the West Coast. And so we arranged to go to Europe. And when we got to Denmark, I managed to conjure up a job teaching at Asko High School on a part-time basis. So we spent from August to April in Asko, and then spent the rest of the time traveling around Europe between, say, May, June, July, and August, and spent 1 month in Norway. Decided that was an awful lot like the Pacific Northwest and worthy of going back to again somehow. During that stay in Denmark, my children went to Danish schools and learned Danish. Kai was in equivalent of the kindergarten, so he had 2 years of kindergarten. Never managed to get into the first grade that way, but he started in I think he started in the second grade when he came back to the United States. Had a few problems with reading, but picked that up with the help of the special teachers, and by February had overcome any problems. Ingrid was in the, forget what grade she was in Denmark, but they put her in one grade and because she would have so much problem with the language, and something happened and she didn't have quite the problem. And they raised her up a grade and were going to put her up another grade, but were afraid to do that because the teacher in there spoke English pretty fluently. So they left her in a grade where the teacher didn't speak fluent English. In fact, I'm not sure he spoke any English. And she learned the Danish language pretty well, and I would say speaks Danish better than I do at this point, although it may be harder to get her to do it.
Would you tell us something about your experience in Grandview College or any other Danish-related school here in the United States?
Yeah, I went to Grandview College from 1952 to 54, which was sort of the, I think sort of the low point of Grandview in terms of enrollment. It was still largely a Danish college. At least most of us who lived in the dormitory at that time had Danish names or some sort of Danish background. It's where I met the only other Egan I'd ever met. As we met, we recalled we'd met 15 years before, or something like that. And I was traveling through there with my parents. But we did a lot of Danish things at Grandview that were part of the Danish heritage. There was a morning devotions, there was an evening devotions, which I think probably tied in with the church relatedness of the college and the Danishness of the college there. We used the World of Song, which comes out of the old Danish part of the church. Nothing was taught in Danish, although the Danish language was taught. 1 year that I was there, I took first year Danish class along with six or seven other people, and as I recall, I was the only one to sign up for second year Danish, so they wiped out the class. And,
what did you teach there? How did you get the job there?
I taught at Grandview from 1965 to 70. I had graduated from the University of Oregon in 62 with my master's degree. Is that right? Yeah. And gone on to do some graduate work at Indiana University, and decided I didn't want to continue that after 2 years, and ended up with a job at the U.S. Information Service in Washington in 65. And in early 65, got a letter from the president of Grandview, Ernest Nielsen, telling me there was a job vacancy there the next year, and would I be interested in it. And I decided I wasn't going to be much of a bureaucrat, so I took the opportunity to start teaching at Grandview. I taught political science at Grandview for 5 years. And by this time, the Danishness had left considerably, although there was still an effort to, a successful effort to maintain a folk dancing organization, which was, I didn't have any connection with it, but may have been less than pure Danish, but still very significant. The alumni, or the annual meeting, is still Studentafest, and the student government is still UK, Unga Klefta. While I was there, we set up sort of a faculty organization, which became the Lehrerversammlung instead of the teachers group, so there was still that desire to maintain the Danishness. And this was kind of interesting, because I wanted to call it something English so that people would know what the hell it was, and the majority wanted the Danish words and the Danish emphasis on it that way. I think the Danish concern, or the more generally speaking, the Scandinavian concern I have now is that I enjoy seeing my children involved in it. And, my daughter, who speaks Danish fluently, and our visit to the Faroe Islands and her desire to return there, in addition to my desire to return there, my daughter's, it's kind of strange, after she's learned a language like Danish, which 4 million people speak, now she wants to learn Faroese, which 40,000 people speak. I'm not sure that's wise, but there is a concern on our part to visit Norway again. I think there's just an awful lot that we can do in terms of visiting, seeing, and stirring up the interest, perhaps not political or economic, but just culturally, and what there is to learn from Scandinavia and to learn about Scandinavia. The interesting thing that happened to me was that it's gone beyond Denmark now to a Scandinavian concern.
Thank you very, very much for the last half hour, Ian. And we deeply appreciate your help in the project that we